of films and television shows in from any language in the world to any other language in the world. And in doing that, we have recording studios set up in 20, 25 countries around the world. We have a network of thousands of subtitlers who, you know, up to recently have been pretty exclusively doing this with speech-to-text being their eyes and their ears on a show and typing in the subtitle materials. And of course, it's an area that's now ripe for AI implementation, and we're doing our tests right now on services, and I'm sure we're going to talk more about that in a little bit, and a couple other ways I think it'll impact us.
Well, you know, I think also when, you know, let's just cut through the clutter on a couple of things, right? Because I think there's a big difference between AI and machine learning, right? And I think that's something also that we should just chit chat about.
True.
I mean, does everybody know the difference between AI and machine learning? Hands. All right, let's talk about this.
Go ahead and tell us. Go ahead and tell us.
Well, I think ultimately people need to understand that AI is an extension, I think, of machine learning. So let's give our thoughts about that first to kind of set up the.
Just I'm looking at my team over there, and they're staying quiet.
You're smiling. But
I just wanted to let you guys know that from my perspective, right, machine learning is where the focus should be, simply because the charts that you guys were seeing just now, we need to understand what is the significance between one variable and another variable. We actually get a number, right? And that's, we use XGBoost for, you know, extreme gradient boosting. AI doesn't have that understanding. It's a black box.
Right.
We can't get that number. Right. So if we cannot tell our clients why you should buy more thrillers, AI said so. Right, we need to understand how to convey messages,
right.
And it's really, really, really important that at least you guys know XGBoost. If you want to code and do machine learning regression analyses, otherwise they won't buy your stuff.
Yeah, you know, I think that's a really good point. So looking at the workloads that you're thinking about, right? So very data heavy, that type of stuff, but there are also uses for AI. You know, when you think about, you know, it's not probably on the data driven analytics that's going to drive purchasing decisions, but you know, as an example, me and some of the architects out there, we spent 3 days this week, we made an AI bot that you can put in front of a MAM to interactively go through your entire archive that we built in a day and a half, and you know, internal Microsoft thing competition. But anyway, so once again, you have to look at the different aspects, but also I think what's really key is you have to look at the talents of your team. And probably the most overused word is data scientist. Like, is it a real data scientist? You know, not to offend anyone, but you know, hey, we got these PhD guys, they're data scientists, you know, you might be someone, you know, really to find those people are very difficult, but also point them in the right direction. They, you know, that's what's very key. So, you know, I was doing a panel earlier, some different thing where someone's like, oh, we have this team and all these data scientists. So I'm like, who could actually do that? So I think it's also proper scoping and the right tools and things like that to what's your problem, who can actually help that, and can you actually go out and hire 15 data scientists to build something from scratch? You might be able to do that. But once again, the whole spectrum of AI, machine learning, all this big data stuff, everything that people are working on, it's a huge toolbox that you just have to find the right, the right part of that Swiss Army knife.
Sure. And I think also when you look at AI and the difference also is can it make a decision, right? Can this make, you know, when you think of intelligence, it's like, oh, I'm making an intelligent decision. Machine learning is like, can I identify this as a ball or a cat face,
right?
Or, you know, is this a beach or a tree, right? But it's almost like the next level. And I would also, then we can even go deeper into deep learning, right? Because that's also another extension where it's like, okay, I got my machine learning, I know what it is, the AI is telling me where it goes, but wait, I want an even better, more educated decision around that.
Yeah.
You know, that's that, you know, we're really talking about also the nexus of you know, Skynet and
yeah. Well, that also feeds into it. When you
and
also
all that scary world, right?
Yeah, but also it's as you start working with customers, you really have to position it right. So like as a technology guy, you can't go into a bunch of creatives and say, we don't need you anymore. I have data and AI,
right,
and we're going to edit your movie, right, and we're going to do all this. Or like, yeah, right. And once again, there's reasons why that doesn't work. You know, Mad Men refuse to read anything. They're in a room, but you have to think about how that comes in, but also comes into ethical AI, There's a lot of things that we do at Microsoft. You have to think about these projects. What's your data sets? How's it actually working? You know, is it using for the right stuff? Like, you know, some of this stuff really, like that Boston, like those robots out of Boston, that stuff scares the crap out of
me.
Oh,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
I need robot insurance.
That's right, exactly.
Not to damper the mood, but I think I might. I told you I'm
Debbie Downer next. Here we go, people. What is?
I support learning for learning, right? And by the way, I forget AI. It's creative intelligence. It's this guy right up there is the best thing versus AI or machine learning. Mm-hmm. And I say that because why do we focus on, I mean, for example, bots, right? Where the industry is right now, right? We don't need bots. We need data to help understand how to decrease the risk in investment in new content, mm-hmm. right? And what, how to exploit that content internationally and right. dubbing and subbing if we need to do that stuff. Mm-hmm. Because the industry is evolving and changing right now. And if we're focusing on, you know, science fiction and media and entertainment, right? You know, that is not the right thing to do. And I just, again, today is a special day. It's the Media and Entertainment Day, right? And this is the opportunity where I believe that we just kind of guide, you know, folks to what to spend time on.
Well, and also, I was also thinking, like, you know, how many times have you heard in the last 6, 12, 18 months that blockchain will save us or AI will save, right? It's all these things that a lot of people don't understand, the amount of time it takes to really build something that effectively does that. And sometimes this is years, if not, you know, decades, right, in the past, right? But the reality is you have to have talent behind that. It's not, you know.
I was having this discussion about, you know, how much science can take over the creative process of translation, which, you know, in the case of text-to-text, pretty good. Yeah. You know, we're testing machines right now that when taught and when given enough materials to really learn the language, the target language, the source language to where it's coming from, they can speed up the process by 50% at best, right? But I still have to put a human QC in front of it because invariably there's nuance, invariably there's context that gets missed still, and then increasingly the more and more that gets better, that's terrific. But I was having the discussion with one of the guys in the studio in the Netherlands, and he's like, well, pretty soon we're just not even going to use actors, you know? We'll just sample George Clooney's voice and all of the vowels and syllables and consonants, and then we'll just synthesize his voice in, 32 languages. And I go, okay, that's a little ways out. So we'll keep building studios, and we'll keep recording people that act well in that language and know the dialect and so on. So it's got its place. Yeah. We see it as a huge advantage, but even listening to the speaker before me, I thought it was about 8 other places in our enterprise, just management, HR, everything else that the topic applies.
And I think that's really important. So, I think that's really important, actually, because AI and machine learning can be used to A, increase efficiency, right? Address the data management needs, because again, things that we've been saying before, this stuff, right, were sometimes overlooked, and these things help automate those things. And I think just wanted to call that out as well.
You know, I think too is we've actually done some research projects with some studios who were doing the translation, and you know, from a pure technology standpoint that I came from Microsoft, you really understand it's the, yes, there's the science, but there's also the art, because we were actually, you know, we were doing English to Spanish. And once again, if you just think about closed captioning and subtitling, there's the art piece of it where, no, that translation is right. However, to break it on the screen and maybe want to round this a little bit, they're going to change that. And we even did things where we had the base translation. We ran multiple seasons that they already did with humans to train the model even more. But once again, it's at both. So the machine's not always going to take it over. Hey, especially when you get something like subtitles, things like that, it's art and science, and you have to massage the two together.
Yeah, that's right. We actually do a script adaptation for the dubbing, because a literal translation, even though it may be correct from the script, from the English language to a Cantonese language, the words needed to say the intent are like 27 syllables, and in English it was 4. So how do you do that? Well, you actually rewrite the words in Cantonese words that convey the same message that might hold sync with the actor. So there's a bunch of things that, you know, are problems that people solve.
And by the way, thank you to the both of you, because these are great examples, right, of how we can leverage new technologies to help, you know, automate, you know, things within the organization. And just for a simple example as well, how many times do we get Excels where it's like it's not formatted appropriately and it just messes up and you have to spend hours and hours and hours, Sandeep, to make sure that that format is appropriate to get it in the to get in the system. And we leverage literally a Levenshtein distance model to make sure that we understand, all right, when we have to update that bad column, right, let's do it automated. And these are simple, simple things, right? And thank you guys for, you know, I think sharing actual, these legit.
Shiv said Levenshtein distance model. Yeah. I just want to make sure. Which is like,
As you think about it.
Geospatial cluster.
Yes, of course.
As you think about
economic time series models.
As you think about this, I'll give you a really recent case study. So one of our customers, we have somebody called PrimeStream that's a MAM, and they did this, the Organization of American States. So that's like one of these government things with all these people from different countries. They have these big meetings. So they had to do a transcript and how you get metadata. And once again, three languages. So these are talking English, Spanish, and Portuguese. So for them to do it, they would actually record this, cut it up, send it to like people around the world who do the translation, bring it back, put it together, QC it. So now they just drop that in. They can actually detect the languages. So they do all three translations, drop it into one timeline, plus get OCR and all of this, and they just run a QC check. So once again, you're going from something that's the efficiency part of AI, plus you're getting additional stuff. So now you can actually take advantage of how you use this. And this just happened like June 25th, right? So this is a way how people are, and this is the entry level. So when you think about all this, you know, it's the meat and potatoes stuff. It's not the big, sexy, super big future thing. Let's find the simple things where once you prove out AI and machine learning can actually show some value, it's always picking that first project. That's what you can actually do.
Shiv, I'm curious if you'd tell me, because your presentation earlier kind of got me thinking about the business I used to run for Verizon, the streaming video business, digital media services. We built it with an API-centric front end to a VOD library so that you could do virtual linear. You could do real-time, not just real-time ad decisioning, programmatic ad decisioning at the ad break, but you could literally run an algorithm through something like your platform to tell the platform what's the next show to program based on predictive analytics and actually build a real-time virtual linear channel that would change with data coming in from any numbers. Anybody picked up on that yet?
No, I say that with a little bit of a surprise.
You heard it here first.
Because I honestly believe it's been interesting building what we've done and seeing what our end users' reactions are. Because I think people feel comfortable getting nudges, not getting things automated where the decision to what's next, is made by something. However, these suggestions on when you're on Netflix or whatever, it's there, but it's just, are we comfortable,
and letting go of the programming handle.
there actually is an example of that. So actually there's a company called Zone TV, and they actually launched this in the UK. So basically it's on Virgin, and what they actually do is it's running on Microsoft, but it's actually pulling metadata out. Oh, actually, there's the picture. So pulling metadata out. So imagine this.
Wow, we lobbing salt.
There we go. Imagine this. You get the content stuff. But really what you're doing is if your kid's watching like Thomas the Tank, you say, I like this, zonify it. It actually goes through the library and builds like a linear channel on the fly of all your clips. So you just see what you want to see.
Hey, somebody was going to
That's kind of cool. So like not on a full-blown linear channel, but think about custom digital for me, especially if you want to, I don't have kids, so I can say this. You just want to put your kid in front of something, just let them watch something when you do it. So
yeah, you do
that. Well, I think also this is also a use case example also where you have to take baby steps, right? Because, I mean, you have an entire supply chain that employs hundreds, if not thousands,
thousands.
All around the world, and you rely on those, on that talent, right? Tech takes talent, right? Yep. And it's not something where a machine is going to come and learn the 50 years of history of doing this through VHS and through DVD and through all these other formats, to where we are today, right? I mean, you know.
You're making me feel old.
I know, sorry. When I say I started in VHS licensing, people look at me like, whoa, check out the dinosaur.
Do you have any betas sitting around or laser discs?
Sorry, no, I was a pure VHS man. JVC product. But, you know, you kind of look at it and you start saying, all right, what's the adoption strategy, right? Because, again, so many conversations, it's like, oh, this is gonna save our life. But then they get into it and they realize, oh, this is going to take me 3 years of very, very difficult work and a lot of investment, right, in order just to get across the hurdle of what we need to do. And it's different when also you have a new use case comes in and somebody's on a, you know, they're all native inside of your platform and it's like, it's a totally different stream. I mean, I'm curious also about the practical reality of
something. So we're deploying the first examples, a couple places, steps in our process. And the first one is creating what's called the English Master Template, which is taking the original English version, in this case, Master Template, and we put it into an English Master. And that's what all of the downstream supply chain language translations are done from. And so even if the original version was Spanish, we do an English master and then go 22 languages out of that. That master template, it's working so well. It's a 50% reduction in efficiency. If any of my customers are here, it all goes into the overhead, so it's not really cheaper. But nevertheless, no, it's quite a bit more efficient. And we're putting that into production like right now. So we're deploying some of it right away.
That's actually a really good point. In order to do something with some of these new tools, right, you got to do it right once, right, and be like, all right, this is right. So metadata, you know, like this is the master metadata template that we want. So that means that we finally have to address, you know, having metadata standards and structure and, you know, finally do that. So it's a really, you know, key point is we got to do it right once.
It's also something I don't think the AI and the machine learning is going to help us with, right? Mm-hmm. We still have to sit down and hammer out some of these things. Yes, we might have some machine assistance, but it really comes down to agreeing, all right, what are these core attributes? You know, the work that Yona and Laura are doing on the LMT, right? It's one field, right? And you see, it's like, it's so important. You have to start really someplace, right? And when you think about also the standards bodies that produce these types of things, they're not exactly tip of the spear, right? They're dealing with sometimes older processes, right? So, you know, I'm also saying this to everybody of like, you know, don't go out and and say, oh, that's it, it's over. I'm going to be replaced by a robot next Thursday. Because it really is something that's going to take a tremendous amount of time to really infiltrate throughout the industry.
Yeah, and I think something else that you mentioned too is the rate of change is incredible. I mean, the stuff that we talk about casually now, like, that was science fiction 4 years ago. And and if you even think about, you know, it used to be people would come to Microsoft like, hey, what's your three-year technical roadmap for X, Y? Like, we can't tell you. Like, we run on a semester basis.
That's right.
And things like, we actually did this really cool project for a studio in March, April. And those features that we had, some capabilities, that's now been rolled into a product. So where that ball is going to be. So if you spend 18 months, 2 years building something, you're going to be behind the curve by the time you're done. So you have to really have to think about that whole mentality of how do you do these sprints? How do you put this incremental functionality? Or else you're just going to be living in a bubble, you know?
Do you think we need some type of standard also? Or, you know, I always think also of API, right? And the concept of API, right? I mean, it's odd, you know, right? 8-9 years ago, right? It was like, oh, we're going to have this thing called an API and everybody's going to be able to talk to each other without revealing the sensitive data and information. So it's not like the old school where it's like, I was saying, people will collaborate in ways that we never thought imaginable. And that's really what's happening. And we're also collapsing and merging, right, in ways that we never thought imaginable. But, you know, it's one of those things where, because this is kind of a neural net, right, and ultimately you're relying on that those other expertise, it's almost like part of these areas could really talk to each other and feed better data and information to accelerate the AI application or the machine learning application. I'm curious, what are your thoughts around that whole piece of it, as specific to our business?
Yeah, I think that's, well, I've seen some research stuff, and once again, when you think about Microsoft, we have two pieces of Microsoft. One is we have the product teams who actually like build products and ship them. Then we have pure research. But we're actually looking at, imagine you come to the table with data, I come to the table with data. We want to do learning across both that, but we need some type of secure AI, secure data processing. How do we do the matching? How do we process them without sharing that with each other, but doing it securely and getting insights so we could actually, so that is what people are looking at. Like, how can guy brings his data, I have my first party data, we get something from a comm school, you know, whoever you want to get your data from. How do you actually blend that together and get some type of insights that you're comfortable with and you can get those agreements? So I would say that's where we're going. How we're going to get there, it's going to take some, you know, I've seen early stuff.
We're there.
Yeah.
I mean, no joke. I'm
smiling at my team.
I thought you were joking.
How do we do the matching? Levenstein distance plus geospatial clustering. All right. Then we have a process to match, you know, different data sets within Nielsen to Grayscale, future schedules that have, you know, just this is the name of what's, you know, being going to play. Marrying it to historic Nielsen data so we can forecast for the future. We share data through Databricks. We, you know, we'll give clients notebooks, right, and make it so we don't give our secret sauce.
Right.
But these are things that is interesting because I wasn't going to tell anybody this, but yeah, these are our strategic things that we're thinking, all right, how to make more money. Right, and I will tell guys, I will tell everyone how we're doing what we're doing, and challenge, you know, people to be like, all right, now BB. So that's my challenge.
Mm. You know, it's really interesting because what someone was talking about earlier, just all the data points that you have. So it's everything's around data, and then how can you leverage that in other places, and how do you get access to that with the proper agreements with people? So that's really what's going to come down to.
But you scratched on the question of standards there too, Guy, and. You know, where does that fit? Now, you know, sharing data through APIs is very common in the industry, and we're doing a lot of that. Structured data exchange, but not necessarily under any kind of a standardization or governance necessarily. It's two private parties interfacing against those programmatic interfaces, but not against the standard. Is it time for any of that? I don't know.
Mm.
Question.
Yeah. I mean, I think the other thing also is, you know, I always fear that we don't have a standard structure that is keeping with the times where, you know, you wait, you debate 6 months over certain clauses and then you're like, oh, it's totally irrelevant now because we've kind of moved on beyond that, right? We aren't even fighting that battle anymore.
But in the media business, I was in the IMF standard creation work. Last time I was in the media business 8 years ago, and I came back this year and people are talking about this new thing, IMF.
Yes, exactly.
You mean it's like actually being used now? Because we wrote the spec 8 years ago.
It's in the roadmap. It's planned. We're going to have support next quarter or half.
I'm also thinking about things like, you know, specifically like localization or specific to rights management, right, where it's like there has to be a common language, right? And usually what happens is through our numerous trading partners, we distill it down to a common language, right? Because it's like, oh, I can talk about the same thing across these multiple people, and they finally understand what I'm talking about after you've explained it to them. But, you know, for localization, it's a great example, right? It's like, is there a way to be able to hone that? And are we shooting ourselves in the foot where we make it so dang efficient that it's like, well, let's get out of this business. It's not making, there's no profit margin.
If you can innovate and lower your cost and lower your price, you better do it, because if you don't, somebody else will. I mean, that's
so
my
true.
Fundamental business so philosophy so is true. Disrupt yourself, because you will be disrupted. Find technology and put it to use faster than anybody else does.
I agree 100%. Yeah. And I'm another part of me wants to ask, like, all right, whatever the standard is, right? Is that standard actually helpful or beneficial? Because I've seen some standards.
Or is it stifling?
Or is it risk mitigating? What's the purpose of it?
Yeah, that's another interesting.
Yeah, you know, we're trying to, and some of these have to come together with, you know, some companies to think about how do we drive that. I mean, that's what we're doing with our, you know, with us and Adobe and SAP together with some of those data standards that definitely from, you know, Experience Cloud and all that type of stuff, we're going to help try to drive that. But that's a lot of work that you kind of get the high level announced, but there's a lot of work happening at the engineering level and the data level to think about what that stuff actually looks like.
Yeah. Let's do a quick wrap also, because I'm looking at the clock and it's like, we already ran out of time. We just did 30 minutes
fast.
Like that, right? It's like, we should have been drinking beer. Smart analytics.
30 seconds till beer. Again.
Right? Almost. We got one more session.
Oh, sorry.
Don't tease them, Chris. But smart analytics, right? The idea is there a way to evolve analytics? Are we still so nascent, really, in data viz and and trying to gather all these sources and new ways interpreting it. Do you think that there is a, you know, and I'm also, this is kind of like a crystal ball-y type of thing. Mm-hmm. Do you see this as evolving from an analytics perspective? Is it going to go, like, you know, the first 3D pie chart, right, years ago was probably like, whoa, it's like in 3D, right? And you're like, okay. Are we moving on a path where we think that this will start that feedback loop and become smarter and really drive innovation in the analytics department rather than just drive data viz and all that business?
Oh, definitely. And you're going to see it going into the business side as well. Totally. Like if you just take a look today, like when we do our sales pipeline stuff, we have machine learning to look at across the pipeline, across your business to say what deals should you be looking at, what should you forecast, what should you, you know, there's all that built-in stuff that's really having all that learning that's really driving the business and the sales leaders are looking at it. So just something like that where you're going from analytics and driving that into how you actually run a big part of your organization that makes money. So that's actually happening.
Cool. Shit.
First of all, thank you guys. Thank you for humoring me. I'll just say in my opinion, it's not smart analytics, it's just analytics, right?
But by the way, isn't it dumb analytics though? I mean, look, taking an Excel spreadsheet and saying, okay, here it all, from the columns into a pie chart, right? That's analytics.
Yeah, 100%. And the smart analytics are the same thing. It's just the crunch work ahead of time to get it into that same nice Excel file, yeah, right, is more. And ultimately, companies will spend hundreds of thousands of dollars for that one-time smart analytics. But what, you know, I just think it's just analytics.
Analytics.
It's just analytics. You just need to do more.
Shit, yeah, where's the showman in you? Come on. And also for your business also.
It's just
yeah.
By the way, you're all showmanship. So respect.
He is all show. But no, for our business, honestly, it's mostly a supply chain business. So it's not intensely in the center of the business that we're running because it's an art and a science and a recording and a translation and a acting and performance business. So it sits on the side of our business, our sales activities, our capacity planning models and things of that nature. But I would tend to agree, analytics are analytics, they're smart, they're dumb, whatever you call them. And are they getting better? Yeah, absolutely. And will it continue? Sure.
4D pie charts.
4D. I love it.
We're dropping into a HoloLens too, so yeah, we're floating over here.
Hey, that's right. We're all waiting for that. All right, time flies when we're having fun. Thank you, gentlemen. I think this was awesome. Great little fly on the wall conversation. Awesome.